seriously popular.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm the Member of Parliament and author Chris Bryant. And in this new series, I'm delving into history, crime and injustice, and bringing you stories which should never have happened. This is Lost Voices. Hanged in 1835, a time which should have been a time of great reform in the country in lots of different regards, but not in regard to the death penalty for homosexuality. And there are several mysteries at the heart of this story, which is what I want to take you through in these three episodes. First of all, why did they hang when others hadn't been hanging at Newgate for more than 2 years? And secondly, why were they the last to hang? When we didn't change the law in this country, we kept the death penalty for homosexuality until 1861, another 26 years. These are the mysteries that we're going to explore in these three episodes. I hope by the end, you'll understand what happened and you'll want to rage like me against one of the greatest injustices in British history. The year is 1835. The world is changing rapidly in Britain. You've got a liberal government. They would have called themselves Whigs, but many of them were liberals in the sense that they believed in free trade, they believed in commerce, they believed in getting rid of the old corruption in the House of Commons. They thought that the factories needed to be properly regulated so that people weren't oppressed and children weren't used. It was a time of complete radical change in British politics. And one of the things that was changing was, for many years, roughly 200 different crimes were capital crimes. That is to say, you could be put to death for them and you would be sentenced to death for them up and down the country. And that included the ancient crime of buggery or sodomy. But what the government at the time was doing was steadily getting rid of all these different death penalty crimes. So counterfeiting and stealing small amounts of money or stealing small amounts of property. And the government was more or less trying to keep the death penalty just for murder and for serious violent crimes such as rape. But nobody, as yet, wanted to change the law on sodomy and buggery, which was technically, and had been since the time of Henry VIII, a capital offence. Most other countries, if they had ever hanged anybody, had stopped long, long before. The Napoleonic Code made no mention of homosexuality, made it absolutely clear that there was no specific offence. The last execution in France had been in 1750, but we were still hanging people in the 1800s up until 1835, and that's quite extraordinary. And this obsession was quite acute. Interestingly, it was always referred to either as an unnatural crime or as the crime not to be mentioned or named amongst Christians. And in fact, so obsessed were people that even in the court records, they don't write the word buggery or sodomy. They write B-G-R-Y or S-D.M.Y. You go, it was absolutely obsessive. And in fact, when Sir Robert Peel was changing the law in the House of Commons about people alleging that other people were homosexual, he didn't even say that it was the crime not to be named among Christians in English. He said it in Latin. It wasn't just the love that dare not know its name, in the words of Oscar Wilde's lover. It was the crime that wasn't even allowed to have a name. For centuries, British men had greeted one another by kissing. But several visitors to the UK in the early 19th century noted that Englishmen were so obsessed that they shouldn't be thought of as engaging in an unnatural crime that they refused to kiss one another and now shook hands. It seems extraordinary, doesn't it, that we still shake hands, whereas in the past we used to kiss one another. One of the rows in court was, did you have to prove that the offence had been committed, both penetration and ejaculation? And the government actually decided to make it easier to get convictions, so you didn't have to prove both of those things. Though, interestingly, as we'll discuss later when we come to the court case itself, that is one of the elements that the prosecution tried to prove, both that there had been ejaculation and penetration. Although the book is called James and John, this is really the story of three men: James Pratt, John Smith, and William Bonnell. One of the difficulties about writing history at this particular time is that the mandatory and statutory process of recording all births, deaths, and marriages only came in 1837, which is after the story that I'm telling. The first of the three was William Bonnell, who was baptised on Saturday, the 23rd of September in 1769 at the font in St Leonard's Chapel in the township of Bilston near Wolverhampton in Staffordshire. Bilston was one of those extraordinary places at the early part of the 19th century and late 18th century that had been completely transformed by the Industrial Revolution. So suddenly you had all sorts of industries that never existed before, and some of the old ones that have been around for a very long time. We think, because it's referred to later, just before he gets deported to Van Diemen's Land or Tasmania, that he had married and had a child, but it's very difficult to track down the details of that. We certainly know that he was a servant for several decades, working in a series of different homes. The second of our three characters to be born was John Smith. Now, it's really difficult to track down a John Smith at the beginning of the 19th century. But we do know that he was born in Worcester, which was a beautiful cathedral city, which was renowned for producing gloves. The glove-making industry was famous and employed several thousands of people in Worcester when he was born around the turn of 1800. We can't be precise because all the babies that were baptised as John Smith in Worcester around this period seem to have died within a few years, as was common at the time. And the newspapers, when John Smith died, got all reported different ages for him. But we do know that he worked as a servant working for a very famous and wealthy doctor stroke chemist stroke book collector who lived in one of the smarter parts of the new build near King's Cross and Somerstown in North London for several years. And we know that his mother was still alive and dependent on John Smith when John Smith was arrested in 1835. The third of our characters is James Pratt. James, we know a bit more about. He was born in Great Burstead in Essex, which was kind of offshoot of Billericay. And it had a beautiful old church from which apparently on a clear day you could see all the way down to the Thames and the furthest extent of London. He was baptised on Easter Day in 1803, and we know that he had brothers and sisters. We know that his father rented a piece of land for a while and was charged tax. And we also know that both his parents died in workhouses and that the family struggled financially throughout his early years. In fact, we know that at one point the poor law guardians in Great Burstead had to provide not only extra money for stockings for the Pratt children, but also some pennies for him to be able to survive. And James Pratt, we also know, got married. He moved to London in 1818, maybe 1819, a young lad, fresh out of the countryside. Quite often, employers in London loved to employ a young lad from the country because they thought that they would be less cunning and they would be more, that they would know their place and that they would fit in better. And because he'd worked in the countryside, maybe that helped him get a job as a groom looking after the horses. In one sense, James Pratt was fortunate when he arrived in London looking for work because he managed to get employment working for William Scott Preston, who was a young lawyer straight out of university, training to be a barrister. And he was a bachelor. And that was important at the time because the government taxed employers who took on male servants, not female servants, only male servants, unless they were employed by bachelors for whom there was an exemption. So James Pratt's first job was living in Camberwell, working as a groom, looking after the horses. It would have been tough physical work every day and he would have had to get up very early. But he seems to have enjoyed it and he remained with William Scott Preston until William Scott Preston himself got married and moved to Blackheath. And at this time, James Pratt went to live with his brother who was working in the docks in Deptford.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
We're on our way to Dolben Street in SE1, just south of the river. It's a different journey from the journey that James Pratt would have made on the 29th of August 1835. He started that day in Deptford, where he lived, in Effingham Place. He'd set off, probably not in... We're in a taxi cab now. He probably wouldn't have taken one of the cabs of the day, or a carriage, or indeed a boat. He would probably have walked all the way from Deptford, which was renowned for its nurseries and gardens and flowers, in particular a very famous plant called the Deptford pink, and it was almost in the countryside. But he was walking into London because he wanted, first of all, to meet his friend Fanny Conan, who an Irish woman who lived not far from Newgate in Swan Yard by Holborn Viaduct. But he was really looking for work because he'd been unemployed for a while. When he came to London, he even worked at the Royal Hospital, Greenwich, with perhaps the most impressive employer of all, who was a chaplain to the king. We don't know why that employment ended, but by the time we come to our story in August 1835, James Pratt is unemployed, or out of place, as they said at the time. So he comes up to London on that Saturday morning to try and find work, to have a couple of pints with his mate, Fanny Conan. And after lunch, he goes in search of work, or that's what he tells her. We are literally at the moment where we arrive in Surrey, or would have arrived in Surrey under the local government boundaries of the day in 1835. And we're going a few roads around the corner here now to what is known as Dolben Street today, but was George Street back then. We'd, of course, had the Hanoverians, so George I, George II, George III, and we were now on William IV, who had never expected to become king because he was a younger brother, but he ended up becoming king and then, of course, was succeeded by Queen Victoria in 1837. So this area was up and coming. They were quite grand terraced houses, stucco and stone and iron railings, fan lights. And it was here that John and Jane Berkshire owned number 45 George Street, which was a corner house, from which they sold coal, and they ran a kind of house removal company. On one occasion, John Berkshire got into trouble because he nearly knocked down an old lady when he was driving his horses too fast across the bridge. He was told off for it and fined. But he claimed that his horses got too excited when they were getting close to home. So here we are, we're just at the corner now. Literally here.
Yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Thank you, mate. Staying around is great, thanks.
That wasn't my knowledge, have you?
People had all sorts of arguments against sex between men. One was that lots of English soldiers had been fighting in the Napoleonic Wars, and they'd been off in France and Italy and Spain, and they'd picked up terrible dirty habits from foreigners. Another was that it was a perversion that came from the devil. And it's quite interesting that in the charges that are made against anybody for sodomy or buggery at this period, it's very heavily religious. It's quite determinedly religious argument. And some of it is just a taboo around sex in general, sex outside marriage, but with a very heavy helping of hypocrisy. Because in 1833, two members of parliament were both caught having sex with other people, with men. Both of them got away scot-free because they managed to get lots of very famous and
high-placed people to give evidence for them in court, including the Duke of Wellington himself. One of these men, incidentally, a few years later got caught again and had to flee the country. But that was available to if you were wealthy. If you were wealthy, you could afford a massive estate and you could afford to buy the discretion of your servants. You could afford privacy. Or if you really got into trouble, then you could go into exile somewhere else in Europe where you'd be safe because the law wouldn't attack you. But of course, if you were poor, if you couldn't afford privacy, if you didn't have rich and famous people to defend you in court or to stand character witness for you, you didn't have any of those advantages. And the danger was if you got caught, you would hang.
We're down in Southwark now, and I'm standing in front of a sign which says Dolben Street, SE1, London Borough of Southwark. And there's a run of buildings, some of which are older, much older. And then there's a building here which has a plaque to Mary Wollstonecraft, the wonderful writer, teacher and champion of women's rights. And that's because this is the site of the building, number 45 George Street, which is where James and John had their assignation. So John Berkshire and Jane Berkshire owned this property, number 45, and they let rooms out. One of the rooms they let out on the first floor was to William Bonnell, an older man, retired servant. And John and Jane Berkshire weren't... They didn't trust him. They kept an eye on him all the time. And on the afternoon of the 29th of August, around about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, first of all, John Smith arrives and asks, is William Bonnell in? And John Berkshire says, no. And John Smith says, well, I think I saw him going in. So he goes straight upstairs. And on the way, John Berkshire sees him open a side door to let James Pratt in. And both of them go upstairs to William Bonnell's room. Then what happens is that John Berkshire, being a suspicious person who doesn't really like William Bonnell for whatever set of reasons, decides to go into the kind of outhouse where the horses are kept and goes up into the stable above and clambers into the roof space, knocks out a tile to be able to look into the room through the window on the first floor where James and John and William Bonnell are gathered. And at first he sees one of them sitting on the other's lap and then the other way around. And then he gets a bit bored by all of this, so he decides to come back down to have his tea with his wife, Jane. Which is when Jane decides to go upstairs and to peer through the keyhole into William Bonnell's room. And she is so scandalised by what she sees, supposedly, that she runs back downstairs and tells John, who runs upstairs and peers through the keyhole again. They claim that they've seen James and John having sex, William having gone to go and get a jug of ale from the local pub. And so John Berkshire smashes in the door, even though it's not locked, so why that was necessary we don't know, smashes in the door. The two men are suddenly caught and are terrified, so they start offering him their purse to say, you know, please don't do anything about this. And he is not impressed. At this point, William Bonnell comes back and says, what's going on? And John Berkshire is still so furious that he decides to call the police. A police officer is brought along and arrests the two men, and they are carried off along with William Bonnell by John and Jane Berkshire, who wander off down George Street to the Union Hall police station, which is where the magistrate will investigate whether or not they should be sent for trial. It must have been absolutely terrifying for James and John. Maybe they never saw men in the pillory. Maybe they never went to any of the other executions, but they would know that what they had been interrupted in was something that could lead to them losing their lives. It's difficult to imagine what that terror must feel like.
On the 27th of March 2010, I got married, or rather, I entered a civil partnership. I was the first MP to do so in the Palace of Westminster with my husband, Jared Cranney. And we did it not in the chapel, because that's only available for Church of England services, and that's only therefore only available to heterosexual couples. No, we did it in the members' dining room, which is a beautiful room full of, you know, Victorian wallpaper and amazing portraits of some of the great figures of British history. And what really struck me on that day was, I wonder what some of the people whose portraits around the walls would have made of us getting married or entering a civil partnership. What would somebody like William Wilberforce have made of it, who campaigned for the abolition of slavery and was a passionate Christian, part of the Clapham sect who believed that we should suppress vice? What would Charles James Fox or Edmund Burke, both of whom campaigned against tyranny by governments either in America or in France, what would they have made of it? Richard Brinsley Sheridan, the great playwright, who always believed that tyranny was to be opposed and people should live in freedom, and in fact led a fairly chaotic love life of his own. What would he have made of all of this? Because they lived at the same time of some of the people that this book is about. And that's why I wanted to write this book, because I wanted to open up an understanding of a period of our history of which we should be ashamed. Of course, it was right to abolish slavery, but maybe the moral panic that came with that campaign, the moral argument that came with it, also brought a campaign to deal with all the other vices in society, of which one was homosexuality. And I was struck recently, having written the book, I was at a book festival talking about something completely different, and I bumped into Oliver Letwin, who used to be a famous Conservative cabinet member, who was one of the people who'd helped introduce same-sex marriage. I told him I'd written the book, and he said, "You mean we used to hang people for homosexuality?" I mean, I knew we were terrible. I had no idea we used to hang people. And I just think it's important that we remember the fullness of our history. And that's why I wanted to write this book. When Robert Valentine arrested James, John and William and marched them off with John and Jane Berkshire to the Union Hall police office, it was but a short journey. What happened then is what we'll be exploring in episode 2.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.